Welcome back to the Groups Matter podcast show. I am Brian Daniel, and as always, with co-host Chris Surratt.
Hey.
And today we have special guest in studio. Chris, this doesn't happen every time. We have, like, in studio here. You know, like, so you see, like, Mike and Mike on television, and they've got their mics on. That's what's going on here today.
It's pretty close, except imagine just one of the mics, the space around him. That's the size of our studio.
Aaron Armstrong, who is the brand manager for the Gospel Project. Aaron, great to be with you today.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So word on the street is that you come to us compliments of Canada.
That's right. I do come from the Great White North, eh?
America's hat.
Which means always like igloo, ice fishing, and hockey, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We're nothing if not always covered in snow, always playing hockey, and, you know, hunting for our food. And all doing it all while riding on a caribou.
So how far north? Are you so far north that you have one of those days that's completely dark where you're from?
Oh, gosh.
One day?
No.
Okay, so that's Alaska north then.
Yeah. No, I'm actually from a part of Canada that is southern than some parts of America, comparatively. So where I lived prior to moving here was just about 2 hours west of Detroit.
Oh, is that like Leamington?
Close actually. London.
Okay.
Actually, one of my favorite little trivia questions that I throw out. Do you know the band Journey, right?
I do.
The song "Don't Stop Believing."
Yep.
Which has kind of had its second and third lives now.
Absolutely.
In that song, he says, "Born and raised in South Detroit," which South Detroit is Canada. Look at a map, the south, just direct south of Detroit is Canada.
So that's right on Lake Michigan, right?
That's right.
I find that fascinating.
Yep. So he must have been born in the water.
Good point.
So I mean, I'm under the impression that all Canadians are big hockey fans. Does that bear itself out in this case?
Not in this case. I'm all about blowing up every Canadian stereotype that there is. So
what needed to happen?
It does. You know what? My whole ministry now is just correcting misperceptions about Canadians. You know, we don't all say a. you know, y'all are going to hear me saying a boot or something like that, or a boat. I don't know for sure how you're going to hear it. But it's not that we're actually saying that. It's just that it's how we speak. So
everything I know about Canada, I'll just put this out there, is from the 80s, 90s show SCTV.
Excellent.
I don't know if anybody is old enough to remember that. But Rick Moranis and John Candy,
mm-hmm.
and some amazing comedians, and they seem to make fun of Canadians for the whole show.
Was that the McKenzie brothers? Was that?
Yeah, Bob
that
and Doug McKenzie,
yep.
Dave Thomas,
yep.
and Rick Moranis.
Yep.
I mean, the great thing about that is that show had so many Canadians on it. Like, I mean, Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas are both Canadians. John Candy's Canadian. It's, you know, we've got a lot of funny people there, because, I mean, what else are you going to do when it's cold 6 months of the year? So you just have to figure out how to make jokes and make yourself laugh.
All right, so you're closing in on 1 month here in Nashville.
That's
now,
right.
I'm sure that you had been down here. I'm sure you had been to Nashville prior to coming on board. But talk a little bit about just that culture change coming from Canada to Nashville real quick before we get started.
Sure. Well, I mean, the short version is that in some ways everything is different. I mean, we all speak English for the most part, but just the things that you take for granted that are just a given in your culture, and one of those things for us in Canada is, you know, just little things like actually having different kinds of choices with your healthcare and stuff like that. In that, like we just recently had a medical thing that we had to deal with, and they apologized to my wife for having her on a two-week waiting list for an MRI, and as if that were a long time, and we just kind of laughed a little bit, because the last time we saw the list was like 8 months in Ontario. So it's like, hey, this is fantastic. If you're apologizing for 2 weeks, I'm okay with that. The hardest part, though, has been figuring out how to interpret when someone says, oh, bless your heart.
I don't know that I know the answer to that.
I grew up in the South, and I don't know the answer.
Okay.
So. I think it's a filler.
Yeah.
It
I think when
be.
I don't know what else to say, that's what I say.
Yeah.
Or one says.
You know, I've heard three varying interpretations of it. There's the genuine, you know, oh, that was, you know, you're a wonderful person, and, you know, God loves you and has a wonderful plan for your life style. There's the, oh, aren't you sweet, like you're patting the head of a small child. And then there's the passive-aggressive, I hate you and want you to die. So,
or just feel sorry for you, for whatever reason.
Yes.
Yes, that is another one that you'll have to get used to, especially around here, is Roll Tide.
Okay.
And that is Southern Tourette's, is what that is. It's just, Roll Tide, Roll Tide.
Okay.
It means everything. So.
All right, fantastic.
Let me ask you this,
yes.
Aaron. Obviously, grew up in Canada. How does a Christian blogger get from Canada to America? What's that journey like?
The short version is the providence of God, but the long version is a lot of time and patience, because it does take quite a bit of time to come from one country to another. Having lawyers involved who know how to write good petitions and collect all the necessary paperwork. The longer version of it is really just coming down to getting to know the it sounds terrible, but the right people who can see that you're a good fit for the work that they want you to do. And thankfully, you know, thankfully I've known Trevin Wax, the managing editor of the Gospel Project, for about 5 years now, and he's a great guy. We've connected lots over blogging and all kinds of other things, and he brought me into relationship with the Gospel Project very early on, and I've loved it for years. I've taught it in a Sunday school context, in kids ministry. I've played around with it a little bit for, you know, personal study for adult kind of stuff, but because I believe in the validity of the content and its usefulness and helpfulness in helping churches make disciples, that basically helps me to do the job and it's ultimately what got me here.
Awesome. And even before that, you started a blog, which is very popular. It's bloggingtheologically.com, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So you're in Canada, and obviously Christianity is not as big of a deal in Canada and all that. What caused you to start this blog, just to start blogging theologically?
Yeah. Two things that really come down to pure desperation. So I was working at a different Christian ministry at the time in Canada. I had just come into a writing role. I'd never actually done it professionally. And so I needed an outlet to really just practice writing and to get comfortable with it, to get good with it. And that's really the only way you can learn how to write, is just by doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that side of it. But at the same time, I was a new-ish Christian. Around the time that I started, I had been a believer for about 4 years at that point. And so I just needed an outlet to figure out, to process what I was reading in different books, what I was reading in my Bible, and just to make sense of a lot of things as I had my own doctrinal convictions emerging and seeing where those were relating to other points in both modern day Christianity and historic Christianity as I went along. And so it just kind of became a thing. People started reading it. People started enjoying it. A few people kindly started linking to it, like Trevin and Tim Challies, who basically is the biggest Christian blogger in the known world at this point. So it's been really great. And just that God has been very, very kind in giving me an opportunity to help other people through my writing as I've been figuring out this whole what does it mean to be a Christian thing.
Very cool.
The Gospel Project is a theology-driven Bible study for groups, Aaron. So last episode, we had Lynn Pryor on the show, mm-hmm. who talked about life application as a starting point. And as you know, at Lifeway, we talk in terms of starting points. So we have a starting point of theology. We have a starting point that's life. Mm-hmm. And then text, which doesn't mean that this text starting point is to the exclusion of theology or life, or that life is to the exclusion of theology and text. It's just that's the jumping off point. So tell us why it's important for groups to study theology. And let me context this. When I was at the Southern Baptist Convention back in June, I was talking with a pastor friend of mine, a guy that I knew growing up, and he's trying to move his congregation to understand or to expose his congregation through their group ministry to theology to a greater extent. But for him, it's been a struggle. And I remember talking with him and thinking, you know, it's about the discipline. It's about the discipline of understanding what you believe. But the question is, so why do you think it's important for groups to study theology?
Well, ultimately, really when it comes down to it, the study of theology is really just the study of God himself. And there's no other person, there's no other being, there's no other topic that is more important for us to study than God, than the one who has made us and the one who has saved us through his son, Jesus Christ. And so that's really why it's so important for us to study that, because when we understand who God is and what he has done and what he is like in our limited ability to do so, it flows down into everything else we do. It flows into how we live our lives, and it flows into how we interact with our neighbors, both saved and unsaved alike, how we do our jobs, how we handle our finances, how we parent our kids. There's not a single aspect of life that it doesn't touch. So ultimately, we study theology because it leads to this increase in our personal worship, because the more we know, the more we appreciate. But it also is just a super practical thing.
I think, and we've talked about it, Chris and I, on the show, and before Chris even Rigsum, that one of the cultural plagues or one of the cultural problems that we have in front of us is we're coming to a place to where we are having a very difficult time, if not outright refusal, to consider the weightier matters, the important things of life. I think there's an attitude out there, as long as I've got my data plan, I don't need anything else. Theology confronts that. It opposes that. So there is an innate value in the meditative aspect of a serious undertaking of the study of God. And it's not surprising that the people, a lot of the congregations and groups you're dealing with, don't want to do that right away, which doesn't mean that they shouldn't. That's just one of those things. So here's a question for you. How would you respond to churches and groups point people, which would include leaders and coaches and pastors, who feel like the Gospel Project may be too deep, which is one of those kind of nebulous words to me, but too deep for the typical small group study?
Right. Well, I think the first thing I would say is that I get it. I've been in a lot of small groups where that has been the case, that people don't always always see the value right away. I think, and some of that just comes down to this idea that we think that only some people are theologians, and specifically that those people are the professional academic types who write the big tomes that no one actually wants to read because they're great for making you want to go to sleep, but you have a hard time seeing what difference that actually makes in your life. But the reality is that we're all theologians. Like I said earlier, when I was talking about the importance of studying theology in general, if theology affects everything that we do, from our worship to how we handle our bank account, then we can't not study it. Now, when it comes to the Gospel Project itself, I think that we've struck a good balance on that in terms of depth versus breadth, I guess is the best way to put it. So for some people, they So for some people, they may be challenged as they participate to go deeper than they ever have before. But for other people, there's an opportunity for themselves to add to that. It's actually possible that some people may not find it deep enough. So when we think about something like the Gospel Project being too deep, really what it comes down to, or not deep enough even, what it really comes down to is, what are we hoping that our groups are going to accomplish? So as we're making disciples, if they are seeing the big story of what Jesus has done and what God has done in sending Jesus to rescue and redeem us, then that has so much benefit to our groups. We talked about this. It heightens our worship. It heightens how we live. It changes our thinking and our behavior. But there's no other topic that we should be studying that is more essential to our lives, because it's going to change us in really important ways. So I've only been on the job, like we said at the beginning, just about a month now, that kind of thing. But in that time and leading up to it, I've heard just tons of stories of how this curriculum is changing not just participants in groups of all ages, but actually the people who are the leaders and teachers themselves. So there's one church in Texas that I was actually speaking with the lead pastor with. He was telling me that he is one of his adult Sunday school teachers was nervous about starting to use the Gospel Project. He's a good teacher. He's very capable with handling the scriptures and with handling a large group of people, but he just wasn't sure if it was going to be the right thing for them. But a couple of months in, he said, you know, this is amazing, because the people who are in the group are getting it. They're seeing these things in scripture that they've never really seen before. They're seeing that all of these things are not that God has done, and all these stories and real events that have taken place, that they're not all primarily about what we need to do or with us at the center point, but what they are is about what God has done. And he gave the example of the one door in the ark, and how reading the story and studying it together through this curriculum helped the group members click and see the connection between the one door in the ark, the one way that people and created beings could be saved from that flood, and the one way, who is Jesus Christ, who is the only way that any man, woman, or child can be saved and brought into God's family.
Chris, Aaron, I think Aaron is hitting on something here that might be helpful to go into a little deeper, and that's this idea of deep. I don't know about you, Chris, but in your travels, but this is something that comes across my desk quite a bit, and in conversations as we pull together discipleship resources and Bible studies, is so how deep do you go? And deep means different things to different people. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
So I think it looks like to me sometimes it means simply there's too many words, too much information, which gets out of transformation. I think to some, you move out of this transformational context and into academic. And that is where a lot of people play something like theology. But the deal is, too many words, too much time means I don't want to put forth the effort. I think either that's between groups, what may be required of a leader. And I think we're at a time in our history, if we ever were not, to where we have got to call that out. And we can't, I don't know that we should let that go without additional examination, that kind of pushback. Have you guys given any thought to what we mean by, or what's communicated a lot of times when people talk about depth? Because some people actually want the word study, the facts, the more theologically nuanced terminology. And then there's others that absolutely recoil at that.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when we think deep, we think complicated. That I don't want to go deep, you know, quotes, because it's going to be too complicated. Where what they've done beautifully with the Gospel Project and some things like that is made the complicated simple, which if you look at what Jesus did, that's what he did. He took these complex things, you know, that the leadership of that day had made it complicated because they didn't want anyone else to understand, and he made it simple. And so I think that's what we do now with curriculum like the Gospel Project and Explore the Bible and other things that really gets into the scripture, and it's not making it more complicated for the people in your groups. It's actually making it to where they can understand it and they're not afraid of it. When you say the word theology, you think of thick books and, you know, things that I'm not going to understand, where what we're doing is we're breaking it down so everyone in your group can come where they are and understand it and then live it. You know, it's that systematic theology. It's taking, you know, the scripture and living it out in their lives. And that's what we need to do in our groups. We need to challenge our group members to be better than what they are now. And the way that we do that is through things like, you know, who God is and why he did the things he did for us. And then now here's how you can live it out.
Thick books that are absolutely void of story, which the Gospel Project has addressed by actually using story as its primary delivery vehicle. Mm-hmm. And I'd say with a lot of group members, all right, let's just admit it. These days, life is hard. So I've got middle schoolers, I've got young children. In our case, we've got, Chris, you and I, we've got children going off to college. Mm-hmm. Just when I think I'm out of the woods in one stage, here comes another one. And then you move into this situation, you've got parents. I think there's a lot of group members out there that are like, just tell me what to do. Just tell me what to believe and let me go so I can mark this off the list. I think theology also confronts that attitude, that if you're going to put all this effort into family, which is good, and to job and career, which is good, and to marriage, which is good, I think your discipleship, which is really what we're talking about here, deserves just as much. So to say that something is... Now, if you've got a situation where the curriculum's just not doing its job, that's another matter. But don't say it's too deep.
Well, I think we also equate deep with boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously,
what a shame. We need to claim that word back. We need to reclaim the word.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, that's really the thing. In the last 11 years, I've been in a grand total of 3 churches. One very recently, because of my move, I was at the first church I ever went to for about 3.5-4 years, and then I was at the last one that I was at previously, just prior to coming here, for 7 years. And so I was one of those guys who was, you know, making the complaint about, you know, things not being deep enough. And I'll be honest, there's one part where I think my complaint was valid, but there's the other side of it where, looking back, some of it really was just coming down to I wanted more information than I was getting, because I'm just wired in a particular way. But you guys really hit it there when you're talking, because ultimately depth leads to transformation in it. And if you have enough information to white paper on joy, but you actually don't live a joyful life, then what your study has done is it's not led to any sort of true greater depth. True depth leads to heart change. It leads to a changed life, changed attitudes, changed beliefs, and ultimately to joy, because that is one of the primary spiritual fruits that we see. In the Christian life, we're to live joyful lives, and if what we are pursuing is not leading to that, then something needs to change.
That's good. One more question for you, Aaron. I know that you read a lot, and in fact, a big part of your blog is writing reviews of books.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are the 2 most important books you're reading right now, or you maybe just read?
Man, I'm reading 11 books right now. I just checked.
Oh my!
I know. I'm foolish. I am foolish. So one of the books I'm reading right now is 4 Disciplines of Execution. And this book is one of these books that is really to help me do my job better. And It's actually one of the go-to books on our list of must reads for my team. And so basically the whole idea is really just how to focus on getting things done, but getting the most important things done. And so it's so you set your wildly important goal, you determine your measures, you create an accountability structure and all this kind of stuff. And so I'm really just in the early stages of reading that, but it is helpful. Some of it is very what I've read so far is very common sense wisdom, but sometimes you just need that. At the same time, I'm also reading Orthodoxy by G.K. Chesterton. I'm reading that in part because I like the way that Chesterton writes. He's very witty. Wordplay just comes so naturally to him, and I love that. Another book that I'm reading at the same time is Between the World and Me, by I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation of his name, but it's Ta-Nehisi Coates. And so what he's writing this book as in the form of a letter to his son, and he's talking about the African-American experience in America. And for me, as a white man from Canada, it's fascinating to read this. But the reason that I'm doing it is because we've seen all of this increased ethnic tension. It's always been there both overtly and covertly for generations, both here and in Canada and in basically every other country in the world. The reason that I want to read this book is because I want to be a better listener of the people who are having a different experience than me, and to become a more sympathetic ear to that.
What's your strategy for your book list? If you've got 11 titles going right now, how do you decide what goes on that list?
Some of it's dependent upon. Upon purpose. So if I'm reading something for a particular project or for work, there's that. A lot of it is just, this looks interesting to me, and some of it is just simply for fun. So, and those books often sometimes take the longest to read, even though they're the ones I most want to. I've got this one book on the list that I just started reading it with my wife and I. Actually, we started reading it about a year ago, and it's still on there. And we just poke away at it every once in a while. We'll read a chapter or something like that. But it's a book of pure Canadiana called "The Vinyl Cafe Turns the Page," and it's a series of short stories by Stuart McLean, who is the premier Canadian storyteller. He does a radio show on the CBC. He does live theatrical events and stuff like this. And it's just these funny and poignant stories of one family and one community. And it's just great. It's just great to read.
Do you read any of the great canonical fiction novels? Do you find yourself in those waters very much at all? Hemingway, for instance, Steinbeck.
I actually haven't read any Hemingway. I should. I love Charles Dickens, and so I love classical fiction. Dickens is far and away my favorite, but I love 19th century science fiction as well, like Jules Verne, H.G. Wells. I'm kind of all over the place with what I read.
That's good. Chris, you're a big reader. What's your strategy? You have one going at a time, or are you more like Aaron, where you've got multiple going at one time?
No, I was actually trying to count how many books I have going right now, and I'm very similar. I need a more structured way to read just to get through books faster, but I have a list of books that are for work. I have a list of books that are just, I need to make me think, and then I have a list of books like Aaron. They're just fun, and you're right, the fun ones sit on my night table and I'm thinking I'll take the last 30 minutes and I'll read this, and I get about 5 minutes and I'm asleep. That's mm-hmm. the way it goes. Yeah,
lots of reasons to read. Knowledge, of course, but I think also it just helps you think. Mm-hmm. It's just an exercise, you read Creativity Inked. Yep. You remember the chapter about patterns? Mm-hmm. that one of the things that allows us to process so much information is over the course of time we learn patterns, and our mind through our eyes fills in gaps. And so my wife and I walk every afternoon, and we notice for the first time we've been seeing this driveway for weeks, if not months, and realize it wasn't paved, it was pebbles. And that's because we see mailbox, driveway, house, mailbox, driveway, house, and our mind fills in driveway aggregate. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I looked at it closely that I realized it wasn't aggregate. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's what the author of Creativity is talking about or was addressing. And I think reading helps us get outside of those patterns because that can be dangerous
Yep.
in ministry and in leadership.
And one of the things I like to do is read at least one book that I don't completely agree with.
Mm-hmm.
I usually have at least one going that that it's just completely different thinking than I have. And I'll even find myself getting angry during the book. I'm like, that is not true. But I always come out of it with, you know, a little bit more understanding about the other side of whatever that subject was. So I always keep one going that I may not absolutely tell everybody you need to go read this, but it's challenging my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm the opposite of you guys. I have one at a time. One.
Now, that's I've just got boring.
A list, and I try and keep the list only three, you know, like two deep beyond that, because an obsessive compulsive cannot deal with 11 going at one time. That was I just have to go curl up somewhere and put my thumb in my mouth, I guess.
Well, I mean, the bright side is I usually get through about 2 a week. So
wow,
yeah,
that's flat. Flying.
That's moving.
Yep.
So, you know, any thoughts on the Gospel Project? Mm-hmm. In addition to the ongoing curriculum, we had the short term versions to bring us back to the Gospel Project. So, groups that want how are those two different?
Well, the I mean, our internal language for the one is the ongoing. And so for listeners, what that means is that that's part of our three-year curriculum cycle. So that starts in Genesis and ends in Revelation. And so that's taking you through the full journey through Scripture to grasp the story of redemption in its fullness. And so those ones are really great because the volumes that you get in those, therefore, they have about 13 weeks of lessons in them on average. They're therefore the consistent, we're here, we're in this, we're gonna do this and see it through to the very end. And it's fantastic stuff. The what we call the short-term ones, those are six-week Bible studies. So those are a great way for a group to dip their toe in the water and see if this kind of study is something that resonates with the group members, and that if they want to go in and take the full dive into the pool, as it were. The one that we've just released is dealing with the minor prophets. And Michael Kelly, who is actually one of our colleagues here at Lifeway, he wrote the studies for that. And they're fantastic. It's a great – and those books of the Bible are some of the ones that are the hardest for so many Christians to read because they're just filled with doom and gloom and warnings of judgment. And they're hard for us because they're sometimes so specific. They're kind of hard for us to really see what is the present day value of them for us. And so his study does a great job of unpacking that. And you get that in both the ongoing, the longer version and in this 6 week study. But it's one that's really worth checking out.
Is that God the Pursuer?
Yes.
So each one of those releases has a title that it tries and does a good job of capturing that theological component.
Mm-hmm.
So this is about, so the Michael Kelly version would be the theological tenet is how God pursues us as a theological truth.
Yes.
And that's through the lens of the minor prophets.
Yep.
So you're not going to get all of the minor prophets. You're going to get that theological tenet as it emerges in the minor prophets.
Yeah, exactly. It's not an exhaustive study of every single letter, but it does cover the major beats. It covers the major beats in of them as a whole, but grounds itself in a few.
So again, I think with the starting points that we mentioned earlier, we have those versions in the Gospel Project in Bible Studies for Life and Explore the Bible. So if your group, if you wanted to expose your group to theology every third, so you could start with life and text and theology, in any given 18 weeks or three Bible studies, you could hit all three of them, which I think is fantastic. That way, like Chris said, you don't get bogged down in one or the other, and you still can address all the different learning styles and approaches to study and discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Aaron, this has been fun. I need to do it again.
Yeah, I'd love to. I've had a great time.
Yeah, welcome to America.
Thank you. Thank you, A.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Groups Matter podcast show. I'd like to thank Chris Surratt.
I'd like to thank you for having me.
And Aaron Armstrong, newly minted. Naturalized, Americanized? What's the term? So still?
No, sir. I am a. I am technically a non-resident alien at the moment.
All right. So, and our sponsor, the Gospel Project, which we have spent today pretty much talking about. So appreciate everyone being with us. Thanks also to producer Drew Porterfield, without whom we would not exist. We would not even have a show. So thanks a lot to Drew. Look forward to seeing you guys next time. Thanks for being with us.